This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Nerds. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Somebody asked me, on my over on Athletic the other day, who's this year's Jahan Dotson that gets traded or gets moved that you wouldn't see? I still wonder about the running back room. Is there something else to happen there? Is Brian Robinson the definitive answer? He's not a three down back, not a much of a factor in the passing game. Do they want a group that's more well rounded? I don't know that there's somebody else to get, but that's the one thing I wonder going in reverse, is that maybe there's a move to be made there. But other than that, I don't know if there's that much that I'm going to have to get done here, even if I'm Adam Peters and have that power.
So that was pretty interesting content, I thought, from Ben Standing of The Athletic on the show on Friday, suggesting he's just not convinced that the running back room looks now like it will when the season begins. And that's compelling because they're kind of loaded up there in terms of the roster, right? You've got Robinson, a veteran under contract. Eckler, who they've paid, their pass catcher, their third down guy under contract. You've got McNichols, who's kind of the Eckler understudy, who also spelled Robinson last year, maybe as a third back. Chris Rodriguez, yet another veteran on the roster, who was very good when he got opportunity.
When he gets a chance, he runs hard. I mean, the Atlanta game? There was a play where no one was doing anything on the ground, and there was a fourth and five or some kind of whatever it was. Heat of the moment, a pitch where he made six guys miss, ran in for a touchdown. You're going, that earned him more opportunities to not dress for a handful of weeks.
He was kind of a better version of Robinson in that role in terms of the big, powerful thumper back. But Robinson obviously got a lot more carries and work. And then you drafted a running back in the seventh round in Jacory Kroski-Merritt, who, if he makes the roster, I think he could be ticketed for the practice squad. It would mean that McNichols doesn't or Rodriguez doesn't or maybe both don't. But that's five guys that I just named for you. Robinson, Eckler, McNichols, Rodriguez, and Kroski-Merritt. So one of them's a draft pick. Doesn't have to make it, clearly. Late round pick. Everyone else has kind of been handpicked by this regime in a sense. I mean, Robinson was drafted before they got here. He's not their guy. Eckler was signed by them. McNichols was signed by them. Rodriguez was drafted before them. But they could have cut Rodriguez last year and didn't. They kept him around. They could have, at some point, moved on from Robinson this offseason. They chose not to. So they have, in varying degrees, chosen to do business with all of the players on this depth chart. But you heard Standing. It came up because he was asked, is there a Jahan Dotson surprise player that gets traded or isn't with the team? And he kind of thought about that. I didn't take that to mean he thinks B-Rob's getting dealt as much as he said it could go the other way, where maybe they still bring in someone who makes somebody else on the team currently expendable. And that brings me to this ESPN piece today. So ESPN.com wrote a story. It was Matt Bowen, our buddy, the former safety here in D.C., and this came out this morning. Best NFL team fits for the remaining best free agents. Also trade candidates. J.K. Dobbins, the free agent running back, linked to best team fit, the Washington Commanders. And here's what Bowen wrote. Finding an ideal fit for a veteran running back is not easy at this point of the offseason, especially for a player with Dobbins' rich injury history. He missed four games with an MCL sprain last season, yet he still managed a career high in rushing yards, 905, and tied a career high in rushing touchdowns, 9. In Cliff Kingsbury's offense in D.C., I could see Dobbins providing competition for Brian Robinson as the early down runner. Dobbins can run between the tackles and has the juice to create big plays on the ground. He took 27 carries for 10 or more yards last season. So let's just start with the premise. Do you agree that there's a good chance, Danny, that the five running backs that we've been talking about here are not all going to be on the roster come training camp, or that maybe somebody gets cut because they bring in a veteran that supplants them?
Yeah, it's larger than zero, less than 100. So I know that doesn't narrow it down terribly far, but I think that's likely. I mean, they're always going to improve on the fringes. I mean, to me, the thing that I've learned about this regime, and again, we've got a sample of 1 year plus, this one free agency period in a draft, where I'm doing the LeBron James gif, where I'm pointing, look at the hole, look at the problem, look at the weakness. They usually don't see it the same way, whether they either plan on working around it, whether they don't think it's a big deal, whether they think their guys are better than we think, whatever. They have been successful. Last year going into the season, I'm going, I cannot believe this is the O-line. I can't believe this is the receiver core for a rookie quarterback. Offense was awesome. Daniels was great. Everything worked out. Ta-da. Going into this season, I'm going, I can't believe this is the edge group. I can't believe this is the running back room. Wouldn't they want something different? And I think they maybe see it differently than I do. And again, they're usually right. I'm usually just pudgy and stupid. So I think there's a better chance than not that me going, I have no interest in this running back room, really, except for Austin Eckler, who's a bad hit away from not being able to play much anymore. That's the style that I want. They only have one of those guys. Everyone else is Brian Robinson or Brian Robinson Light. I think they like that better than I do. So I think there's a better chance maybe than not of them going in with that kind of group, and whether Rodriguez gets swapped out or Michael Wiley gets swapped out or somebody else for a veteran on the edges. I don't know that they're going to go dip into the pool.
How old do you think Brian Robinson is?
26.
How old do you think J.K. Dobbins is?
He's only been in the league 4 years. 26.
They're the same age.
Yeah.
I think that would surprise a lot of people. Now, Dobbins got to the league quicker, to your point. He missed the 2021 season. So he's actually been in the league for 5 years. He's the same age as Brian Robinson.
Well, there you go.
Robinson's been in the league for 3 years. That's why I bring that up. One of those guys made the leap quicker and was just younger when he got to the NFL. So despite two more seasons in the National Football League, they're the exact same age. Dobbins' injury history is just a disaster, though. One of those injuries, I think the preseason 21, was here in Landover. It was actually at then FedEx, where he tore his ACL.
His ACL, that's right.
First of a couple of times. But remember, as a rookie in 2020, he averaged 6 yards per carry as like the number two back for Baltimore on early downs as a 22-year-old. He was awesome. But he only played, he played in 15 games. The next year, he missed the entire season. The year after that, he missed half of the season. He averaged 5.7 a pop. 2023, he played in one game. That was it. Got hurt again. And then last year was the most durable he's been since his rookie year, and he averaged 4.6 per carry. Brian Robinson has never done that.
Right.
Brian Robinson, in his career, he's gotten better every year, to his credit, but he's averaged 3.9, 4.1, and 4.3. Dobbins, in his three seasons where he's had multiple games, 15, 8, and 13 games, he has averaged 6, 5.7, and 4.6.
I mean, he was incredible last year in LA.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
No. But how much of that is, they live the lifestyle of running the football.
Right.
That's Jim Harbaugh to the third power, right? I mean, they're a different breed when Harbaugh shows up and preaches running the football every single day. Then Kingsbury was kind of running it to set things up and to get back to what he wants to be doing in the horizontal raid. But still, if you're asking me Dobbins or Robinson, and you guaranteed me health for both players, if they both played 16 games this year, who would I rather have tote the mail and you're giving them the exact same carries? I'd rather have J.K. Dobbins.
No question for me.
But there is no such thing as the guaranteed health. And so I'm not going to supplant 26-year-old Robinson for another 26-year-old who's got a way worse injury history.
I think that's very well said. I love the idea of Dobbins. And if it doesn't cost you much, then we could talk about that. But that, what scares me...
Would you bring in Dobbins to compete with Robinson, to be with Eckler on that depth chart? Merritt's probably then on the practice squad. if it means Rodriguez is out and maybe McNichols is out.
I would do that. I mean, but the thing that I cannot do is go, I don't know how to say this in a better way, so maybe you could try to pull it out of me, where I would go, okay, my problem is solved, or the position is done. I can't say I will now book J.K. Dobbins for 200 touches. Like, I'd love for that to happen, but come on, man. We've all seen, you've seen the injury history. You
so know what the game's like.
So it means if it starts to be a bidding war, someone else is going to have to deal with the injured reserve, or someone else is going to deal with that. To me, if it's cheap, then he'll help you when he can play.
So I could be wrong. I think we're past bidding war territory. It's May 19th.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bidding war.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a guy that teams are lining up to try to give carries to based on his injury history. Now, he may do the Kirk Cousins thing where Kirk right now is sitting around and going, I'll wait till somebody gets hurt before I start really examining and looking
for a monster deal, yeah.
Trade or whatever. Like maybe J.K. Dobbins is going, it's about fit for me. And maybe he has turned down a couple opportunities and he's looking for the right money. I guess that's possible. I don't know. But my guess is when the phone rings, he's signing somewhere. If they can guarantee him an opportunity to compete. And here, Jaden Daniels and read option and the running game possibilities they're in, I'd imagine this would be an intriguing landing spot. I think, how do I want to say this? If Dobbins was not an injury concern, it's the most obvious upgrade ever, in my opinion.
Yep.
Because we've seen the B-Rob thing for 3 seasons now. We know what it looks like. And I'm not anti-Brian Robinson. I think Brian Robinson is a good player, but what you see is what you get. It's going to be about 4 yards per carry. He's not going to get yards that aren't kind of created for him, and he is not going to homer a triple. It's singles and the occasional, very rare, perfectly blocked double, but it's mostly singles. It's 10, 12, 14, 16 yards or your explosives, whereas Dobbins, with the way he runs, especially after the injury, those little Mighty Mouse legs,
uh-huh.
I mean, he actually is hitting 30 and 40 from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Robinson, everything you said, I echo, but I also think there are probably times where there was something there, where it just, if you just cut back, or if you just saw it. It's easy for me to say on my couch with my feet up, very comfortable, but it just felt like watching him. There are times where you go, dude, it's right there. Oh, and then it's gone.
Where are your feet?
My feet is up.
Okay.
So are his after getting smashed. Oh, thank you. But it's basically, he's sitting there. Or it feels like whether it's a vision question, whether it's an agility question. Again, I like Brian Robinson. He would be on my team. That's a good dude. I want him to play for Smash Mouth times. I'm just not doing the Brian Robinson, everybody. Like that New Orleans game that we were at where they just kept ramming him into the line of scrimmage hoping that something would be different. I just don't play it. I just don't do that. I can't.
Now, Commander's Twitter has worked themselves into a frenzy about Brian Robinson, okay? Because he did say the 4 words that every player says on social media when they feel like they're being talked badly about by the fan base. Keep that same energy. And then he attacked a 100 emoji on it. This was just on Friday, as a matter of fact.
This was Friday?
While he was in the weight room, I guess.
Oh.
Keep that same energy, 100 emoji.
You got it.
Now, I don't know if that means he was keeping it a buck, or if that means, like, what, Darius, if you don't mind, what does the 100 emoji mean at the end of keep that same energy?
It's like it's basically a way to stamp the way to put it is stand on business.
Nah, it's like don't
now,
say
wait,
it that
wait,
way.
Now, what does that
try
mean?
Another way.
No, what does that mean?
You don't like stand on business?
No. Try something
if I could
else.
Just get that right.
Yeah. Okay.
He said, keep that same energy, uh-huh. 100 emoji, which is that like saying
100% of the time?
No, it's not. Definitely not that.
No?
I think he's saying, keep that same energy, 100, meaning, I see you guys. I know what you're up to.
Then why wouldn't you use the eyes emoji for there's
yeah,
a visual?
Yeah, this is why I think stand on business kind of
no, but
is what, where we're going.
I didn't hear what you said. What'd you just say?
Stand on business?
No, you're not saying anything. The phone's cutting out. Why?
So I'm saying stand.
I'm throwing up everywhere.
On
Can you
business.
Get someone to come clean up this table? There's vomit all over the place. Ryan, you're a young person. Why is he putting the 100 emoji after he says keep that same energy? I can only imagine it means he's going to average 4.1 yards per carry instead of 3.9 this year. That's my hope.
I believe what he's trying to say is he's trying to keep it 100. Trying to keep it 100.
He's keeping it a buck.
So yeah. He's able to keep it 100 while asking someone else to do something?
No.
Just with an emoji?
Say keep it a buck. He's keeping it a buck.
I'm good on that. Okay. But I think he's personally keeping it 100%?
I think Ryan's right now that I think about this. he is keeping it real with you.
Well, this is incredible.
Yeah, you guys need to keep that same energy. I'm going to keep it real with you.
So he's able to do all of two separate things. Asking for everyone else. This is not an internal directive here. This is an external directive. All of you, keep your same energy. With a mirror emoji, the lens is turned towards him. Here's 100% authenticity.
Yes.
I'm keeping it 100 myself.
I'm keeping you guys honest by keeping me 100 and a buck. Something like that.
Hmm.
But like, so he's motivated. I'll bet he was motivated last year with a new coaching staff. That's the part I never get about this. It's like, y'all pissed off Brian Robinson now.
Okay.
Again, I like Brian Robinson. I think he's a good little football player. I want him on my team. I would just like someone who could hit a home run in the backfield to be my bell cow. And then Robinson comes in and gets the occasional carry. It's not disrespectful. I'm just keeping it a buck myself. He could keep it a buck. I'm going to keep it a buck.
Oh, wow.
I need 4.6 yards per carry, 4.7 yards per carry. Someone who occasionally turns 10 into 30. Someone that turns 27 into 77. Like, that's what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. That's my 100 emoji.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Nerds. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Got a great show planned for you today. In 1 hour, your Beltway Blitz. We're also giving away tickets to see The Offspring. They're going to be out at Jiffy Lube Live with Jimmy Eat World and Newfound Glory. So make sure you're listening at 4 for that. Defenders quarterback Jordan Ta'amu. They just got a big win out at Audi Field this weekend. They're going to the playoffs. He'll be in studio with us in 2 hours at 5 o'clock. And the general manager of the Washington Capitals, Chris Patrick, looking ahead to their offseason plans with us. He'll be on the phone at 5:30. So we got a lot going on, but right now we're very, very happy to tell you that in studio with us is an at-large council member here in the nation's capital. Mr. Robert White is with us. Thank you for joining us here in our studio.
I appreciate you all having me. Excited to be here.
Of course.
It's our pleasure. So the news broke that a deal had been struck, that there is the framework for a stadium in Washington, D.C. as a station, as you can imagine. Tons of reaction from fans. We've been trying to get to the bottom of this with a deadline set up for July now to see how this is going to go. And we've talked so far to four different members of the council. You'll make the fifth that has joined us on the show. So I guess let's just start with floor is open for you. Your thoughts at this point? Would you vote yes for this stadium plan?
So, I'm a fan. I'm a lifelong Washington football fan. Born in '82, so I came of age in our glory years. Loved the ascent. Did not love the long descent.
You didn't. It wasn't as much fun for you.
It was not as much fun as you would think.
Do you you have memories then at RFK Stadium?
So I couldn't afford to go. The tickets were expensive. Something still true football today. I didn't go to my first game until I was probably in college.
Wow.
When someone had pity on me and like at the end of a losing season, they're like, "Do you want these tickets?" So, but now I'm a dad. I'm hoping I can bring my girls. But watched on TV religiously every Sunday. Was lucky enough to marry a woman who loves football. Unfortunately, she's from New York. So when we're playing the Giants, she's not on my side. Other than that, she's rooting for the home team. But I'm excited. My first reaction on the stadium was excitement. I you know, it's the Washington Commanders. Would love for them to be back home in D.C. But I can't, as a council member, just be a fan. And so I had to dig into the deal. And unfortunately, right now, it's a bad deal for D.C. residents. We will lose a ton of money. But my goal is to improve it so that we can get this done. And I think it's doable. It's just going to take some work.
What has to happen, in your view, to make it to a place where it's acceptable to you?
Yeah, so there are a few things. The Commanders are making a large investment, $2.7 billion. What I remind folks is they're not making a gift. They're making an investment. And I see very clearly how they make their money back. Ticket sales are going to go to them. Revenue from concessions are going to go to the team. Revenue from the parking lot that taxpayers build is going to go to the team. We're going to lease the land for $1 a year. And then the rent from the hotels and restaurants, that's going to the team as well. Nothing really is going to the city. So we're going to spend about $1 billion. We're going to have to take on debt. So you'd start to double that. If we leased out the land, we're talking about $6 to $25 billion over the first 30 years. And so we're putting, DC taxpayers are putting a lot in, but we don't get any revenue. So in order for this to be a good deal for DC, there has to be revenue sharing so that we can actually make that money back. We are making an investment as well, not a gift. And we are upside down financially, the city right now. So we got to make that money back. I want to see apprenticeship opportunities during the construction so we can get DC residents working on that. And then one big thing that sends a message, and I've shared this with the team, you got to bring your headquarters to DC as well. I couldn't see any team saying we're going to move our team from one state to another, but we're going to leave our headquarters in another place. So certainly want to see the headquarters in DC as well.
So the Capitals and currently train in Arlington, but called DC home. It's never really been an issue. What do you say to that?
The practice field for the Commanders is in Virginia.
Right.
That will probably remain in Virginia because D.C. just doesn't have a lot of land. So I understand as a practical matter.
So what did you mean by headquarters?
I mean their offices, front office, back office. Those folks should be in D.C., and that's not been a commitment the team has made yet.
Councilmember at large Robert White, kind enough to join us here in studio on Grant and Danny. So I believe, sir, you're a Ward 4 resident?
I am.
So I spent a lot of time in D.C., went to kindergarten through college in the city, and spent a lot of years living in D.C., and I don't know that a ward has changed more than Ward 4, but some of the different neighborhoods and the development, everything from Petworth to Brightwood and everything in between. I'm curious, as that has kind of the changes have happened over the years, how do your residents feel in general? I mean, it's hard to speak for everybody, obviously. Nobody's got one voice, but how do your residents feel in general about just the team coming back, stadium, and what that might do for them?
Residents are excited, and as an at-large member, I represent an entire city.
Right.
I have the privilege of living in Ward 4 as a child, and now again as an adult. I moved around the city in the middle. But residents, I think most residents want the stadium back. Most residents are counting on us, the elected officials, to make sure it's a good deal for D.C. And I think people are concerned about the idea of D.C. being left holding the bag. So as we are in a revenue deficit, if we put multi-billions of dollars into this in 5 years from now, we're still paying for it, not seeing revenue come into the city. That's a concern for most people. So they're depending on us to make a good deal. And, you know, if we invest in this, that means we're investing less in schools. schools and police stations and building a new jail. And so that's a trade-off that residents are going to need to feel comfortable about. But, you know, you got to spend money to make money, but we don't want to spend money to lose money.
Councilmember Robert White at large, D.C. City Council, in studio with us on Grant and Danny, discussing the possibility of RFK 2.0 and the Commanders coming back home to D.C. So the latest polling we've seen is from the Washington Post, 55%, so majority of D.C. residents in favor of about $850 million being spent on this project. The number, obviously, $1.1 billion asked to folks as well. It's actually much higher in the ward where they'd be building the stadium. Mm-hmm. And the folks that would actually be most inconvenienced by the building of the operation, but also benefit the most immensely from all the things that'll be there, wanted it even a higher rate than that. So when I hear you say it's bad for the city, and then it sounds like you'd be a no right now, I guess my question as someone who doesn't really get politics all that much would be, would you vote against the majority of the people then? I mean, if the majority of D.C., your constituents as an at-large, are saying, hey, at a 60% clip, let's say, yeah, let's do this. And then the people that are right there are going, I don't have a place I like shopping. I'd have one. Mm-hmm. I don't have a place that I could go to this store. We'd have one now. Does that matter?
It does matter. It matters a lot. But residents are counting on me to have a full picture. And so when residents say, yeah, we're comfortable investing $850 million, they're counting on me to know whether or not the actual cost is a lot more. They're counting on me to know whether or not we're going to make more. They're assuming we're not making an $850 million gift, but rather an investment. Right now, as the deal is structured, it is not an investment for DC. It's a gift. So they are counting on us to not get swept away in the excitement, which I'd love to do as a fan, but to rather dig into the details. If you polled the residents around the stadium, probably not a majority of people who want it. The amenities, grocery stores, or what have you, in Ward 7, but not east of the river, which is where we need those grocery stores. And so that's where the responsibility of elected officials comes in. I say put aside politics, right? Like, we don't really need the politics here. You know, a good investment is a good investment. A bad investment is a bad investment. I think what residents are saying pretty clearly, which is the same thing I'm saying, I'm a yes if the deal is good for DC. And so let's get there.
Totally agree with that. I guess the big question is this a negotiation or is this the deal? And it sounds like you don't like this particular deal, but my question would be, I mean, I drive by that area all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Going to Maryland to go pay my tax dollars as a Virginian in Maryland to go to games, which would now be in D.C. But if it's not the stadium, what is it and how long does that take? I heard the chair of the council suggest it could be several years before anything gets done there if it's not this stadium. So we're just sitting there in perpetuity with this land where maybe it's not as good a deal as you want, but it could do a lot better for D.C. than weeds.
But probably. But think about, what was it, maybe 30 years ago. Do we think that the Washington football team was saying to Landover, hey, we're going to build this stadium, and it's going to be desolate around there? No, they were saying it's going to bring in a lot of revenue. It's going to spark all this type of investment. But it's not. And Maryland is not, Prince George's County is not heartbroken about losing the team. So, you know, that's why I have to make sure we're making a sober decision. And because this isn't my background, I've reached out to economists around the nation. And what they have told me is that they've seen no deal as bad as this. And I keep asking economists, can you point me to somebody who can tell me how this is a good deal? I've yet to find that economist. And if that economist is listening now, reach out to me, rwhite@dccouncil.gov. Like, I'm trying to get smart, but I have yet to find an economist locally or nationally who says anything other than this is a really bad deal for DC taxpayers.
Despite the fact that they're paying for 3/4 of it, which is pretty unheard of in a split with a city.
That's right. But this is also the second highest public investment in a stadium. And not long ago, SoFi Stadium was built without public investment. But economists have not really been split on whether or not stadiums are a good deal for taxpayers. And so I do see real benefits of having the team come back. I think it's not a slam dunk for D.C. We can make it a win for D.C. But right now, it's pretty bad.
Well, sitting in the Navy Yard here, Nats Park's a few blocks away. Gigantic win for this ward, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Now, it's different, right? Maybe that's your point. Baseball, 81 dates. Football, not as many, although the roof gives you an opportunity for more dates.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody could argue. My dad used to work here and be escorted to his car when he was working for the defense with an armed guard 25 years ago or whatever. Now I'm going out to eat at all these restaurants and we're working here because of Nats Park. It's been a gigantic win for this city,
yeah.
That ballpark,
yeah.
As an anchor.
It has. Nats Park is a really great example. It's one that has paid off pretty well. Nowhere near the timeline that they said. Nowhere near. To look at something more recent, we look at CareFirst Arena in Southeast. If you look at the number of events that were promised before a shovel went in the ground, we're at about half of that right now. If you look at the revenue projections, we're nowhere near those revenue projections. And if you look at other stadiums across the country, very similar thing. And so I do think Nats Ballpark, which has a lot more events, a lot more games, is a little bit different. The other thing that's different that I would use as an example is Monumental's stadium downtown. That investment made a lot of sense to me because if you look at the revenue they bring in, it's somewhere around like $40 million a year in direct revenue, not even counting the spillover revenue. 1,000 to 2,000 permanent jobs and about 2,000 part-time jobs, that's a clear investment. So when we invested $500 million in that stadium rehab, I can look at the numbers and see how it makes sense. But I have not seen any numbers that show me how this one makes sense. And we want it to make sense.
Councilmember, I hope you have a lot of spare time. I imagine your inbox will be flooded with all the economists that generally listen to Grant and I. We're huge.
You would not believe how many every day community. We're like, can we get a sports fan? Enough economists calling in.
Like, you're exhausting. But process-wise then, okay? So this is the part that I'm not exactly clear on. So again, forgive our ignorance here. What it sounded like to us was, this is all folded into part of the mayor's budget that is going to be submitted to you all, and then there'll be a discussion. This isn't the only discussion with the mayor's budget. The mayor's right. Budget's got a lot of other line
There's
items.
A couple other pages?
Yeah, nothing to do with us and football, the thing that we like. So what's the process like then for amendments, changes, mm-hmm. Those sorts of things? Walk us through that, please.
Yeah, so the council has not gotten the mayor's budget yet. Usually we would get that at the beginning of April. It's late at this point, but we should get it next week. I imagine, because we're in a deficit, that there will be a lot of cuts. And so when schools are looking at losing funding, when we see less investment in all the things we normally see investment in, and we're saying we've got over $1 billion for a stadium, folks are going to have a little heartburn about that. But, you know, I'm prepared to talk to people. Again, you got to make investments so that we can get out of this deficit. But you know, the mayor and the commanders have said they want us to finalize this by July 15th. That's not realistic at this point because it is part of the budget and we haven't gotten it yet.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a second. I saw again today on, I think it was Channel 9 in D.C., this mention of a July 15th deadline. What does that actually mean? Why is that a deadline? How set in stone is that? How flexible are we to push this thing potentially? Because on the team side, they got to make moves here. I mean, they're That's trying right. to open this thing in 2030. So I understand you guys want the perfect deal, but a not a perfect deal stadium or no stadium at all could ultimately be the decision you've got to make.
Right. I don't think we're going to get to a perfect deal. That can't be the measurement. But again, there has to be some conceivable way that the district doesn't lose a lot of money on this. We've got to be careful as we, you know, are knocking on the door of a recession, as we're in a deficit. We've got to be really careful about spending a lot of money and not getting a return on it. But the commanders and the city can agree to an extension of that July 15th. That was a date that that the mayor and the commanders negotiated without input from the council.
How has the team been in terms of these conversations? Have they been amenable to suggestions? Have they just said, hey, take it or leave it? What have they been like to deal with?
So I've met with the team before we got the deal and setting up a meeting with them. I think I'm meeting with them tomorrow or Thursday of this week. So they've been open to meeting, but I've been asking for revenue projections. The mayor said it's going to be $14 to $15 billion revenue for the city. I asked the mayor for the revenue projections 2 weeks ago. I've asked 5-6 more times since then. I haven't gotten them.
Maybe the seventh time.
Maybe.
We're joined in studio right now by at-large council member, D.C. City Council, Robert White, kind enough to give us a few minutes on Grant and Danny. So I want to go back to kind of the crux of what it sounds like is your issue, which is you think you guys are going to lose money on this deal.
That's right.
I don't see how that's possible if you have a Super Bowl and if you have a Final Four? The NFL draft's coming here. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer. You may. Do you have any idea how much money you guys would stand to make as a city by having the draft and people from 50 states coming in here?
So the draft is coming next year. There won't be a stadium.
Understood, but a part of why it's coming, I think, is because of the progress of the stadium. But regardless,
it's part of the push for the stadium. And again, I have to remain sober as I look at this. But Super Bowl, how many Super Bowls are we going to host a year?
If you host a decade, one, I mean, economists suggest that's worth over $1 billion by itself potentially.
I've not seen that. So we, I don't know how much we would bring in, how much net revenue we bring in from hosting a Super Bowl. I don't believe it.
So you don't, and I'm not questioning you, I'm just asking, you don't believe then when people say to me, and I've had many people say, if they get a Super Bowl and a Final Four, that in and of itself could return the city close to the $1.1 billion investment with two events. You don't buy that.
That'd be wonderful, right? Okay. So again, I'm not looking for, I don't think anybody on the council is looking for a perfect investment. We're just looking for an investment that doesn't almost guarantee that we lose a lot of money.
So in other words, I'm not asking you to speak for other members of the council, but I'm sure you've had conversations, whether introductory or even in depth. How many would you say, or others that have said, you know what, I actually see the point that you're making, or how many are gung ho? Just kind of where are we at in terms of that? We're just the, you know, the peons out here. Don't know which way's up.
I think very reasonably, like me, most people don't want to be the face or the voice of somebody raining on the parade, right? I don't either. I'm a big fan, and I want to see the stadium here, but I have a responsibility to look at this deal, and so I think most members are trying to keep their powder dry if they have questions. And so I've heard the chairman of the council with a similar message to mine. You know, he's looking at the numbers and it's not making sense to him yet either.
So we had you undecided before you got here.
Mm-hmm.
So far, based on this conversation, I'm putting you in the yes column. I'm just kidding. I'm putting you in the no column, right? But we have four yeses and they need to get to seven.
Mm-hmm.
As of right now, just to reiterate, I guess, do you think they have seven votes that are yeses?
No. But I wouldn't put me, so got some people have me in their yes column, some people have me in their no column.
Everywhere I look, it's different.
Right.
But having talked to you, you're squarely in the no column on this deal, I would say.
Yes. And
which is the only deal we have.
Vast majority of the council is likely a no on this deal. But I also think that almost all of the council wants to get to a yes. And this isn't like, you know, politicking or like, hey, fund my pet project. This is just make this a good deal for D.C. The district, and this upsets me about the team, as somebody who has been such a big fan, watching what happened to our franchise over the past couple of decades was painful. And I think a lot of decisions that leadership and the team made were bad decisions. I really like what the new owners and management are doing with the team. This is a time to repair those relationships, to get the fan base excited again, not to have a city sort of reluctantly saying, we got a stadium, but we feel like we got taken advantage of. And we got to get past that. So what you see right now is a push for the excitement, not discussions of the deal. And that should make you a little bit nervous.
Our guest in studio with us is at-large council member Robert White on Grant and Danny. July 15th is this tentative deadline for now to try to figure out what's going to happen at the RFK 2.0 site. I want to ask you a question I've asked each council member we've had on, because even though I'm obviously adamantly about this stadium being in D.C., I think it's the best thing for the city, for the team, for all of us as fans. It'd be amazing. I get we're coming at this from different angles. You got a different job. What is a better option for that land in terms of growth, tax revenue, and jobs? Like, your point may very well be true. This isn't perfect.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything you guys could put there that's going to do a better job than this stadium at providing those things. Where am I wrong?
We don't know if you're wrong because no one's pursued it. And so some folks would argue, well, it's been 30 years and there are no other options on the table. Well, I used to work on Capitol Hill. So one of the things I know is that the district was coming at the tail end of a previous lease with the federal government. So we couldn't be planning for land that we weren't going to control. This land only became viable within the past few months when we got a 99-year extension on the lease. So right now is when we would be saying to the best minds in the country, give us your best ideas. for FedEx Land, they're planning things right now that, as I hear, they're more excited about than the idea of keeping the stadium. So we don't know.
I mean, Wes Moore is following the team around like I follow around my puppy. So I'm not sure if I completely agree with that.
Prince George's County does not seem
heartbroken. They've offered them $500 million to keep the team.
Right.
It's not because they don't want them.
I haven't heard Prince George's County saying that.
Okay, that's fair. You know more about that than me.
But all that to say, I don't know what else we would do for this land because we haven't pursued it. But I don't necessarily think we need to right now. We need to figure out how to make this deal work. As we walk into the beginning of a deficit, and you were here, I'm guessing, in the 80s and 90s, mm-hmm. right? That was a deficit that lasted a long time. As we walk into a deficit, we have to make sure the deals we make are in the best financial interests of the city. And if this is in the best financial interest of the city, let's do it. If it's not in the best financial interest of the city, let's not just say, well, there's nothing better we can do. Let's just eat it. No, let's make it better.
Is there a drop dead point in terms of, this is a bad hypothetical. I can't deal with any deficit. I can't deal with any loss, or I can deal with some knowing that it's an investment kind of given the climate that we're in. Does that make sense? There's sliding scale there, right? Where you go, and you've already said it, you got to spend to make.
Yeah.
Is there a, we can't spend this much right now, even knowing it might be beneficial down in the future? Or is there a sliding scale as long as you can see the viability and the numbers to go? Like, where does that line go for you?
It's just viability. Mm-hmm. Is there a likely chance? Are we more likely than not to gain revenue and jobs? Right now, almost all of the risk is on the city because all of the revenue is going to the team and to the project. All of the, even taxes are staying there. So nothing's going to the general fund. And that puts all of the risk on the district. And I think we need to share profit and share risk.
Our guest is going to be meeting on this a couple times a month, probably between now and July 15th.
Yes.
Sounds like you guys have met presumably multiple times since this came down. I mean, what are those conversations like? And then how often have you talked to the mayor? The mayor at one point called in just listening to our show and gave a very different story on how great she thinks this is. Yeah. I mean, she's in opposition with you on what this would do for the city. Like, what are your conversations with her been like, if at all?
Well, I met with the mayor, as I said, 2 weeks ago. I told her my concerns. She said, we are projecting a $14 billion, $14 billion in revenue. And I said, excellent. Can you send me that projection? And I haven't gotten it. Yeah. You follow up the next day, the day after that, the week after that. It's still coming, apparently. And so we've been talking. And, you know, obviously the mayor's been pursuing this for a long time. I'd like to see her get there. But it can't be at the expense of the city. And I think most residents, as residents understand even the basics of this deal, they get very nervous.
Makes sense. Councilmember, we've already kept you too long. This is so kind of you to stop by and shed some light on things. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me.
It's awesome that you came in. It's, you know, we've reached out to everybody. And as I say, there's a handful of you guys have been willing to answer questions about it. Haven't heard back from a bunch. So
yeah, a lot of stiff arms from a lot of people.
That like to talk and answer questions. Those are my kind of guys and ladies. So thank you.
I appreciate it. Good to be with
you. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
There you go. So that is the latest on what's going on with the stadium.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Nerds. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
This is not me joning, I swear, but I don't remember more national NFL reporters who prominently cover the league universally being wrong about anything than they were this week about the tush push. Every single one of the heavy-hitting reporters saying it was going to be banned, and today it wasn't. 70% of teams, roughly, voted to ban the tush push. 22 of 32 clubs said get rid of it. 24 needed to say get rid of it. So two teams shy of enough, the three-quarter threshold, to make it happen. The dialogue continues for another year now. And Danny, the tush push is alive and well for one more football season.
I will never forgive the Titans, Jets, Saints, Patriots, Dolphins, Jaguars, Lions, Browns, and Ravens. I repeat, I will never forgive the Titans, Jets, Saints, Patriots, Dolphins, Jaguars, Lions, Browns, and Ravens. I will never forgive you for doing the incorrect thing. Such a fixable, easy, simple thing, and you screwed it up. The Eagles, I don't blame them. They figured out a loophole with the stupid rule that's easily fixable. And so they want it because they think it's to their advantage. And, you know, there, of course, it'll be Johnny from South Jersey, tough guy, but you don't like it, you could stop us. No, wrong. It's a stupid rule. Very, very easy to fix. And they said, let's not do that. I am so mad about this because, again, it's such an easily fixable thing with a wonderful alternative that will be wildly effective for you, Eagles, or anybody else that wants to use it. The quarterback sneak works so well. It's delightful. It is an excellent, excellent football play to do the exact thing that you want. This assisting the runner nonsense should go away immediately. We were so close, and I will never forgive those nine teams, plus the stupid Eagles, who I also hate so much, for screwing this up.
You have the nine teams you just read through?
Yep.
Give me them again. I want to try to figure out why they would have been... And I don't even know that they're for it, but not against it. So go one by one here.
Titans.
Don't really play the Eagles very often. Maybe don't deal with it much. I don't have a whole lot there. Maybe they feel like they can do the tush push now that they just drafted Cam Ward number one overall. I don't know.
Jets.
Another AFC team. Doesn't play the Eagles very often. By the way, that's a theme here.
Saints.
Okay, got nothing for you there. I mean, maybe they just don't like the idea, the precedent of a play works at a really high rate and you're getting rid of it because people are struggling to stop it.
Patriots.
AFC.
Yeah, a lot of AFC. Dolphins.
Out of sight, out of mind is what you're noticing, right?
Like, yeah.
If you don't have to deal with it, then maybe you're not as bothered by it.
So the Lions are one of the teams, and that's one I don't quite understand. I mean, that's Dan Campbell's mantra of like, it doesn't matter. We'll eat a kneecap regardless. We'll barbecue your shoulder joint. I mean, whatever. So they're idiots. Them and the Saints, the two NFC teams. Everyone else is AFC, which is interesting. But again, I will never forgive those teams
you
for screwing this
two
up.
Two teams and you couldn't get it.
Yep.
Am I wrong?
Or no, you're right.
Everybody say this was going to pass. Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport. I saw Rossini all morning saying it was going to pass. Who's my buddy? With the Athletic. I mean, dude, come on. All of them, all the newsbreakers.
I think it was heading that way, but something happened. I don't know what.
Well, so here is going to be my annoyance. I'm just telling you right now that this is going to be the narrative after today, and it's going to make me very angry. I don't know if you saw this, but Jason Kelce went into the meetings this morning. Did you see that?
That was so like, I've seen the memes or whatever, but I don't.
The big story today was that Jason Kelce, the former center of the Eagles, accompanied owner Jeffrey Lurie into the meetings. And everyone was like, he's here to save the tush push. And I thought, oh my God, just what we need, another day of attention-seeking Kelce behavior, right? You can't turn on a TV during the football season without bumping into Jason Kelce. The narrative's going to be that he convinced some teams to, like, cross the line. That everyone said it was going to be banned because there were 24 or more teams that were ready to ban it. And then Kelce gave some speech, or by addressing the other teams, he was able to, you know, like a president trying to get people to cross the aisle to push through healthcare or whatever it is. He was able to get a couple people from the other party to come over. That's what we're going to hear, and it's going to drive me out of my mind. That's not what happened. There was just never 24 teams. But when I hear that, I'm going to be annoyed. Like, he's the godfather of the tush push. He's already Mr. Tush Push because he was the center and he was the guy that was quite literally in the middle of the play over and over and over again when it was so successful. But, Danny, think about how much more obnoxiously Eagles fans are going to celebrate every short yardage situation now.
Of course.
You were with me at the link. Darius, you were sitting with us. Every time there was an and one in a game on third and fourth down, all of the dumb Eagles fans stand up and like hit each other on the shoulder, and they're like, we're doing it. Here we go. It's time. It's time. Where's Jalen going to line up? Oh, it's the tush push. Here we go. They did that before. They wrapped themselves in the flag and the pride of this play. And that was before the league came for you and missed. That was before the league came for the king and couldn't knock you down. That was before 22 teams voted against your thing. And now you won. You still have it. I thought already, I'm like, this is going to be insufferable. Their fans are going to be terrible. The team posted a 26-minute video on YouTube the minute it didn't get banned. They're already trolling and going, it's going to be their whole identity now.
Of course it is. Yeah, the relishing of no one liking them is, you know, antisocial, personality disorder type behavior. And here they are just embracing it, walking around like it's some badge of honor. I mean, the Packers rewrote the rule so it specifically doesn't target. See, that's the other part. The part that annoys me is you see in Schefter's tweet, NFL needed 24 votes today to ban the tush push, but only got 22. Here are the teams that voted against the tush. It's not a tush push ban. It's a ban against assisting runners. Green Bay had to rewrite the rule.
But you know what it is.
I know exactly what it is. But in order to prevent weird hurt feelings or that like some team is being targeted, yeah, it's targeting them, but whatever. In order to prevent that, it's just the common sense, normal football thing that we've all had for decades upon decades, where I don't want my my running back to be thrown over the line of scrimmage to get an and one because he happens to be short in stature, and I've got a guy that was great at the discus in college, or pushing runners from behind, or guys coming into piles and spearing them, moving the pile forward by a yard and a half, two, three, four, 5 yards. It's not what football is. It's never been that. It's a dumb rugby scrum, and quarterback sneaks work so well. They had to rewrite it, so there are no hurt feelings. And so it's now turned into this quest to end the Eagles' reign of terror falls short. They're now empowered, and they're on a mission to show the rest of the league can kick their ass. No, no, this is so infuriating. It's so infuriating. And again, everybody in the mentions is like, this is so weak, it's so soft, you're so soft, 10 teams are strong, let's stop you on the field. Again, the quarterback sneak with Jalen Hurts will be more successful than anyone else's quarterback sneak. You'll do great.
This is 1,000% one of those times where the reaction is more annoying than the thing, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Player does something stupid, and then people act like it's not stupid, I get more upset at the people than the player. Like, Antonio Brown this week, shockingly, was involved with police officers, ripped out a gun from his pants, started firing it in the air, allegedly, whatever needs to be said. And then the story is that he's saying someone tried to rob him, there's video of him getting into a big fight outside of a celebrity boxing match, I'm sure, by the way. And so this fight ensues, and he's saying people tried to rob him, and he was defending himself or whatever. The people that are allegedly tried to rob him are saying, we're victims. We were fought. We were beat up, basically. So who knows what happened, right? I certainly don't have all the details. But the idea that him ever taking out a gun and firing it a bunch of times into the air with a bunch of people around him is a reasonable thing to do. That's more annoying almost than like anything else, is the defense of the stupidity in our society now. When someone does something dumb, please say they did something dumb. That's what annoys me worse. Someone does something bad. You go, you're just a loser. You're soft. You're a boomer. Uh-uh. Acknowledge that the thing that was unacceptable is unacceptable. And I think that's where some of your anger is coming from here.
That's a big part of it. That's a big part of it. And again, it's like this weird crusade, and they're turning into some personal affront. Like, you listen, I give them credit. I think every team should be doing this stuff. And not just that play, but I mean finding some weakness in the rules. Like whether it's a formation thing, or when Mike Vrabel years ago like had his players purposely jump offside, or you know, you hold on purpose, whatever the hell it is, when there is a loophole in the rule that's soft and ineffective, you capitalize on that. Not every team has a quarterback that can squat 1 million pounds and a great offensive line that can do this sort of thing. You do, so you should use things that are within the rules. And this is what's happened in every walk of life in the history of Western society. Hey, this used to be legal. We now see it's not in the spirit of what we were trying to do. It's actually kind of it's not a violation yet because we haven't made it illegal. But what we will do here is to prevent this kind of bleep from happening, rewrite a little text, rewrite a rule, just to make sure that we kind of stay back on and put the playing field back level again. It happens all the time, and it's going to happen again. And the NFL was like, no thanks. Leave it.
Are you guys surprised that after days of hearing that the tush push would be banned, today we found out it wasn't? And why do you think 9 teams were against banning it? Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, is where we find our guy, Mike Florio. You know him from his work at Pro Football Talk. You see him on NBC Sports as well. Mike, you are on in the nation's capital. We appreciate a couple of minutes. How are you?
Great to be with you guys. Doing well. How are you?
Good, buddy.
Very well. Very busy weeks. So there's a lot of ground to cover with you. But I actually want to start with, because we haven't talked to you since, almost a month ago, we found out that DC and the Commanders were moving toward a stadium deal. We've had all kinds of council members on since, and the fight is on now to try to get this thing done. What's your take from what you've seen on the deal and whether or not you think this is going to work out in the city in D.C.?
Well, it was a very well-coordinated PR push to launch it. I think it helped to have the announcement of the 2027 draft in D.C. right on the heels of it. The bottom line is you've got to convince people, whether it's individually through a ballot measure. Typically, those now fail when they happen, or at a higher level, pulling the levers of government, getting the elected officials to support some sort of a device for coming up with the public money necessary to build one of these stadiums. Because at the end of the day, every owner looking for a stadium wants to have some degree of taxpayer money devoted to the project. Very rarely does an owner build his or her own stadium. The most recent one significantly was in LA with Stan Kroenke, but he decided, I'm going to own this, I'm going to profit from it, and I'm going to have as many events and other business activities as possible. Typically, the move is, we need taxpayer money, and that's where the fight's going to be. Will DC Council approve it? Will the effort, and I assume the deadline to pass now, and I haven't seen anything about it, to put it on a June ballot, if that fails, the only way that this would be stopped, if it would be stopped, and I'm not saying it should be, but I'm just saying there are forces out there that are opposed to the idea of subsidizing multi-billionaires. If DC Council approves it, it goes through. If they don't, then they have to come up with something else.
Mike, we'll get to the specifics of the assisted runner play, tush push, brother of the shove, whatever you want to call it. But and I'm not ripping anybody because it wasn't just one person. The reporting seemed to be this is happening. It's going to pass. It's, you know, we're going to be without this thing. And all of a sudden, they were a couple of votes shy. How did that go down?
Well, people were reporting that it's going to happen because they and we, me specifically, we were reading the tea leaves. The NFL wanted this. And what the commissioner wants, the commissioner usually gets. And the commissioner is adept at twisting the arms necessary to get to 24 when he wants to get to 24. Now, they tried to make this one look like it wasn't something that originated with the league office, but we reported immediately after the vote. The Packers were recruited by the league to do this, just like the Lions were recruited by the league to propose a new playoff seating structure because the commissioner wanted it. So the commissioner went into this round of meetings with three things he wanted: NFL active players in the Olympic flag football tournament coming up in 3 years, reseeding of the playoffs, and a ban of the tush push. And he went 1 for 3, which is good in baseball, but not when you're trying to flex your political muscles within the organization that you run.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk on Grant and Danny. So they needed two more teams that they couldn't get. Major progress made, though, from what was 16 teams against it to then 22 teams against it. Are we in line for this thing to go away in a year, or do you restart? Like, how do you see the future now of the tush push?
Well, it all depends on how determined the commissioner is to get rid of it. You can look at it and say, hey, we just need to get two more teams, and the next occasion to do it is March of 2026. We've seen in the past when the commissioner is determined to get something, he gets it. 3 years ago, 2 years ago, excuse me, he wanted to have a flex option added for Thursday Night Football. He met stiff resistance at the March meetings. By the May meetings, he got the votes he wanted. Yesterday, I think he believed he was going to get them. I think it went to a vote because he thought he was going to get them. If they didn't think they were going to get 24 votes, that thing would have been pulled, like the playoff seating proposal was. So at the end of the day, a lot of stuff happens behind the curtain, whether it's deals made, whether it's retribution for opposing the measure, whatever it may be. If he really wants 24, he's going to get there. And a lot of it also depends on what happens this year. If we see more incidents like what occurred in the NFC Championship when the Washington Commanders jumped repeatedly offside and it created that debacle where referee Sean Hockley had to eventually say, if you do it one more time, I'm awarding a touchdown. I think that was the catalyst for this most recent push against it. If that starts happening on a regular basis when a team is pressed up against its goal line, that's going to make the commissioner more determined to do it. And if they can cobble together data to support the idea that it's a safety risk, that makes it even more likely. So I don't think this effort is going to go away, especially when they got so close. When you think about it, 22 out of 32 is still more than two-thirds. Mm-hmm. More than two-thirds of the NFL wants to get rid of this. The only reason it's still there is because their supermajority calls for 75%, not 66.667%.
Mike Florio with us here on Grant and Danny. So I wonder, you know, the everybody's got a different reason. Philadelphia probably wants to keep it because they're good at it. But, you know, the AFC teams maybe don't have to face it. I mean, who knows exactly what each team's motivation was, Mike, kind of to your point. But was there a sense that from what you were hearing that maybe it was a couple teams felt like they're unfairly singling out somebody in terms of Philadelphia? And if we come up with something really good, we don't want that taken away from us. Is there that sense there?
That's the precedent that I think everyone would need to be concerned about, that your reward for coming up with an innovation that others both can't stop and can't duplicate, because there are two prongs to something like this.
Yeah.
Your defense should come up with a way to stop it. Your offense should come up with a way to take advantage of it. I think that if you start down that path, it doesn't bode well for the NFL, and it actually deters innovation, because if we crack the code and come up with something good, if we come up with a way to exploit the rules on the books in our favor, they're going to take it away from us. I think the bigger issue is this thing was mishandled by the league from the get-go. Back in 2006, when they changed the rule that previously prevented pushing of a player anywhere on the field, that planted the seeds for this. It was almost like a 17-year cicada. It took 16 years for the Eagles to eventually weaponize this thing and build it into their playbook and use it on a regular basis. And that's when the league should have done it. In 2022, after that season, the league should have said, hey, whoa, 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 whoa. we never intended when we took away a rule that primarily addressed downfield near the sticks or near the goal line effort by an offensive lineman to come shove the runner to where he was trying to go. We never intended that to be turned into something that's going to activate at the line of scrimmage. We need to get rid of this now. The fact that they waited and the Eagles got so dominant at it, that's what created this perception that the Eagles have found this thing that they've repeatedly used, and now there's enough people who are resentful of it and scared of it, frankly, that they were able to cobble together a bunch of cockamamie reasons. It's the safety issue. Where's the data? We don't have any. It could be a safety issue. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, it doesn't look like football. How about that? It just felt like a disingenuous exercise to come up with what they should have done when this all started and said, we never meant that rule change from 2006 to be used like this.
Terrific NFL guest and insider Mike Florio is with us here on Grant and Danny. Pro Football Talk is where you can find his work. Of course, NBC television as well. Mike, how about the reseeding opportunity that is no more? Am I misunderstanding? Did that not even get voted on? Did the Lions just pull that off the table? What happened there?
The Lions proposed it in March, and it got pulled or tabled to May. And I think they believed they were going to get 24 votes. And then when they realized that wasn't going to happen, it got withdrawn. This was another one the commissioner wanted. Rod Wood, the Lions president, admitted after the March meetings that the league approached them to do this. And this comes from a very simple belief. And I don't think that it logically fits, and I don't think in practice it would ever bear it out. The idea that if you have straight seeding without regard to division championship, your late season games, week 17, week 18, when teams have settled into a seed, hey, I know I've won my division. I'm not going to be any worse than the third seed or the fourth seed. You rest players and you create less compelling games. The argument is if everything's up for grabs 1 through 7, you're going to have more compelling games because everyone's going to be sprinting all the way through to the wire and no one's going to rest starters. You know, the week 18 games this year, other than the games played on Saturday, which weren't as compelling, the Sunday night game, extremely compelling. The Sunday afternoon games, week 18 this year, stunk. There was nothing, or at a minimum, very minimal potential playoff consequences. And I think if they're ever going to do this, the bigger problem that it speaks to is if you're going to determine the playoff seeding in a conference, 1 through 7, based only on record, you better take a step back and look at your scheduling formula. And you better come up with more ways to have more games in the conference between the teams in the conference that are ultimately going to have this apples-to-apples comparison. And you know, I think that conversation needs to be had anyway. Too much of the scheduling is premised on variety and rotation. 8 of your 17 games are based on a rotation that takes you through the 4 divisions of the AFC. If you're in the NFC East, you play all 4 teams of the AFC East 1 year, NFC or AFC North the next year, AFC South the next year, AFC West the next year, and then there's a rotation in the NFC, the other 3 divisions. You play all 4 teams from one of those divisions every year. That's 8 of your games. It's based on this rotation aimed at ensuring that there's as much variety over time as possible. If you're a season ticket holder, over 8 years, you'll see every team in the league at one time or another. I think if we're going to tear down the walls of the divisions, they need to be more sensitive to the fact that there needs to be more head-to-head play among the teams that ultimately are going to be stacked up 1 through 7.
So, Mike, you referenced both the NFC Championship game moment with the 9,000 offsides, and I would point to another moment. We're talking about playoff reseeding, in fact, involving Washington, when they were terrible, 7-9, and they hosted a playoff game. They're usually moments that are almost catalysts for these kinds of rule changes. I guess my question is pretty broad, but what does it take for enough embarrassment or enough like, oh my God, that can't happen again? I think of that the pass interference that should have been called Rams New Orleans Saints. They said, yeah, we'll review pass interference penalties for a little while just because they were so upset about that individual moment. Of course, they ended up repealing that. But why didn't we reach those thresholds there? And kind of what does it take in general? Walk us through that.
Well, I think it all starts with someone getting the idea, whether it's based upon media coverage, perception of embarrassment, or someone just doesn't like it. I think it just has to reach a critical mass that causes someone to say, we need to do this. And the fact that the effort to get a proposal from a team instead of going through the normal process that's in place to have the competition committee look at it and talk to people about it, formulate a proposal, take it to ownership. We always hear how powerful and influential the competition committee is. Why are they running behind that and instigating teams to make these proposals for things the league office wants? And, you know, I'm a firm believer in Occam's razor because my brain is typically equipped only to understand things in the most simplest terms. I think it's reasonable to conclude that as the playoff seeding, the commissioner didn't like that there were so many games in Week 18 where teams rested their starters. Hell, the Rams gladly accepted falling from 3 to 4 on the playoff tree, even though it meant they were going to face either the Lions or the Vikings. They were confident that they could beat them, so they rested their starters in Week 18. All it takes is one thing for the commissioner to say, you know, we need something better than that. And with the tush-push, here's why I think this. Not long after the NFC Championship, Mike Carrera, who was the VP of officiating for years and now is the Fox Sports rules analyst, he said, because of that moment from Washington, Philadelphia, they're going to take another run at getting rid of the tush push. And I'm like, well, why would you take a look at getting rid of a rule simply because you don't like the way that one team tried to stop a play that no one can stop? But I think it's as simple as this. The commissioner wanted playoff reseeding. The commissioner wanted the tush push out, and he went 0-2 on those.
Mike, what do you remember going back to 2022 here? We talked about this earlier in the show. I know you wrote a lot about this then, even wrote something about it in the last 24 hours. Jim Irsay was the only owner that came out publicly and said that they should vote to remove Dan Snyder. We played some of the audio today, but he was a hero here in D.C. when he did that. And I know there's plenty of stories in all directions on Irsay's life, but that's probably how in D.C. he's going to be remembered. Why do you think he broke ranks? Was he just a wild card? And how much did that actually matter?
There was a lot that was gurgling among ownership ranks about Daniel Snyder, the Beth Wilkinson investigation that stopped short of a recommendation that he be compelled to sell because the league said, and I think your station did some reporting in this regard, that somebody found the written report that the NFL never wanted because the NFL didn't want it in writing that Snyder should be compelled to sell. That happened in 2021. By 2022, this was still kind of out there. I think the spark for Irsay was the ESPN report from right around the same time that Snyder supposedly had dirt on multiple owners, dirt on the commissioner, and he was going to use that if anybody dared to come after him. And it's as simple as Irsay saying, well, hell, I don't care. Everybody knows my dirt. You're going to threaten me with something like that? And I think there may have been a level of indignation over this idea that Snyder would dare to threaten his business partners. That may have been the thing that caused Jim Irsay to go off. And he went off multiple times, and he was not backing down, and he didn't care. He said what needed to be said. He said what people in the room were thinking, but no one had the guts to stand up and say it. And I think it was great that he did. And within a year after he said what he said, Snyder was gone.
Small matter just to regular football stuff. Will George Pickens work out in Dallas?
There are reasons to think he will, and there are reasons to think he won't. The reason to think he won't is every time the Steelers have decided they had enough of a receiver, that guy never really does much anywhere else. If anything, it falls apart for him. Look at what happened with Antonio Brown. Look at what happened with the kid from Notre Dame, number 11, Chase Claypool. Took me a little while to remember his name. They got a high second-round pick. It became essentially the last pick in round one that year because the Dolphins had lost their first rounder for tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton. 32nd overall pick for Chase Claypool, and he never did anything with the Bears. So there's reason to think it won't work. Here's the reason to think it will work. George Pickens has never had a good quarterback. George Pickens has never played in an offense that sought to maximize his talents and get the most out of what he can do. And I think of Randy Moss when he went from the Raiders to the Patriots. We had all thought Randy Moss was done. Randy Moss was playing with quarterbacks. And there's one guy he played with in 2006 that I've even forgotten he existed. That's how bad their quarterbacks were. He goes to Tom Brady the next year and Josh McDaniels and that offense in New England. He has one of the great single receiving seasons of all time. And that's the other thing Pickens has never had in Pittsburgh. Someone to take attention away from him. Someone to take heat off of him. They're going to have their hands full defending CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens this year. So there's a chance this works out very well, and the Steelers look foolish for giving him up for only a third-round pick in 2026.
All right, Mike, we'll let you out on this one. Last one. Joe Burrow complained about the Bengals not having international games the other day. Said he's done a lot to grow the game. I don't know exactly what he's referencing, but I'm guessing he's gone on trips or something. And he's upset that he hasn't had an international game. Is that how most guys feel? I get the sense that they view it as a pain in the butt and don't want to do it. Do a lot of players like the games?
I think he's in the minority when it comes to international play. It is wild to think that if the two Ohio teams, they picked the Browns instead of the Bengals this year. But it's rare to hear that. And you know what? The NFL is going to seize on that because they are determined to continue this. The Vikings getting two back-to-back road games in both Ireland and London this year, and they play them consecutively. That's the start of what's going to be a new trend. I think as soon as next year, you'll have two or three teams that do that. Before too long, there'll be four teams that do that. And some think that this is all the test case to see how the logistics will work for the teams that will be traveling to Europe to play one or more teams that are located there permanently at some point in the future.
Mike, pleasure as always, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. Always very good with us. I didn't even put him on hold that time before he was 88 out in the gate.
You're not going to have a chance with Mike Florio.
One of the quickest in the game on the hang-up.
He and Mike Lombardi are the two top couple seats.
I think he's moved ahead. Lombardi was the one seat. Now Lombardi's the GM of the University of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So he's taking orders from Bill Belichick's girlfriend. But I think Florio's probably jumped past him on the quickest hang-up in the biz.
So do you think it's landline, finger hovered over the button to hang up, to end the call?
Well, that's a cell phone, so there's definitely no landline. I mean, you could tell that was cell phone. I think it's just, all right, you got it, guys, end.
That's quick.
I think he said his thank you. I thanked him. He thanked us. Whatever's after that's not his problem.
But I 100% agree. We're talking about a quick exit.
I'm just saying, like, that's his
like
mindset.
You go from ear to you got to look at the screen, move your thumb, and hit end. He's quicker than everyone else. That's kind of the point.
He's probably got one of those buttons on the side of the phone you can hit that ends the call.
Yeah, there you go.
That's probably he's a side of the phone button.
Side of the phone guy.
Might have to be.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.